Late one October night in Barron, Wisconsin, a gunshot shattered the stillness. Inside the Kloss family home, parents James and Denise lay dead. Their 13-year-old daughter, Jamie, was nowhere to be found. In the isolated months that followed, a nation watched, hoping, searching. Then, nearly 3 months later, Jamie appeared on a local doorstep, alive and defiant. Her escape marked the turning point in a chilling true crime tale that revealed manipulation, survival, and extraordinary courage. So if you think you've heard it all, you haven't. Hit follow on your favorite platform and leave us a comment, because the next story might just change the way you see everything. Don't miss a single twisted turn. Chapter 1. The Murder in Barron Midnight. Silence shattered Barron, Wisconsin. A quiet town nestled in farmland and forest, a place where most families still left their doors unlocked at night. But on October 15, 2018, the stillness was shattered by a sound that would echo across the nation, a gunshot, then another. At exactly 12:53 a.m., a 911 call was placed from the Kloss family home on Highway 8. No words were spoken, just sounds, chaos, fear, and then nothing. Within minutes, deputies from the Barron County Sheriff's Office arrived at the scene. The front door had been blasted open. James Kloss, 56, was found just inside, shot dead. Down the hall in the bathroom, Denise Kloss, 46, was discovered lifeless beside the tub. Her arm still clutched a phone as if trying to dial for help. And their daughter, 13-year-old Jamie, gone. No trace of the living. The responding officers secured the house with weapons drawn, hearts pounding. The horror they stepped into was precise and deliberate. There were no signs of robbery, nothing stolen, no forced entry other than the door blast. The home was undisturbed, except for the blood, the shell casings, and the absence of Jamie Kloss. There were no footprints outside, no tire marks on the gravel. The killer had come prepared, with calculated speed and chilling silence. Sheriff Chris Fitzgerald stood in front of cameras hours later, eyes heavy. "We believe Jamie is in danger. She is not a suspect. She is missing, and we are desperate to bring her home." The Amber Alert. By sunrise, the entire state of Wisconsin knew Jamie. Just an obsession, a delusion, a plan that ended in double homicide. He wanted to own her. Jamie's strength and her plan. In the first weeks of captivity, Jamie was frozen by fear. She obeyed every command. She didn't cry. She didn't scream. But as time passed, something shifted. She began watching his routines, noticing when he left, measuring how long he was gone. She paid attention to small changes, what time the mail came, how long he showered, where he kept his keys. And slowly, quietly, she began to plan. She waited for a mistake. The day it broke. On January 10th, 2019, Patterson told Jamie he'd be gone for a few hours. He didn't barricade her under the bed as securely as usual. As soon as his car left the driveway, Jamie acted. She pushed the boxes aside, ran through the door, into the cold, into the trees. She spotted Jean Nutter, a woman walking her dog. "I'm Jamie Kloss," she said. "He killed my parents. I need help." Nutter rushed her to a nearby house where police were called. When law enforcement arrived, Jamie gave them a full description of Patterson. His car, his house, even the license plate. He was arrested minutes later, returning to find his prisoner had become his downfall. Ending Chapter 3. The Captor Unmasked. Jake Patterson had tried to erase himself from suspicion. He had no connections, no online history, no paper trail. But he forgot one thing. Jamie Kloss was smarter, stronger, and braver than he imagined. Her silence had been survival, her escape, a strike of brilliance. Now, her captor's name was known, his face was public, and justice was coming. But the next challenge would be even harder, for Jamie to rebuild a life from the ruins he left behind. Chapter 4. Captivity in Gordon. The Cabin in the Pines. Hidden deep in the forested back roads of Gordon, Wisconsin, a pale green cabin sat quietly behind a wall of pine trees. It looked like any other old property left to time. No front porch, just snow-covered ground, an unpaved driveway, and a screen door that squeaked with every gust of wind. Inside, it was dark. Sparse furniture, thick dust, windows blacked out with blankets. No heat, no internet, no visitors. This was where Jamie Kloss spent 88 days in captivity. To the outside world, it was a forgotten cabin. To Jamie, it was a silent prison. Under the bed. Her world was the space beneath a twin bed, no more than 18 inches high. Patterson had wedged bins, laundry baskets, and barbell weights around the bed frame, forming a makeshift cage. He told her she couldn't make a sound, not even a whisper, or he'd end it all. He worked hard to keep her hidden. If anyone came to the door, delivery drivers, neighbors, his father, Jamie was sealed beneath the bed like a buried secret. He even turned music up loudly before leaving the house to drown out any possible noise she might make while he was away. She wasn't allowed to use the bathroom unless he let her. She wasn't given regular meals. Sometimes he gave her a granola bar. Other times, nothing at all. She never saw sunlight. She didn't cry. She didn't scream. She waited. Rules of survival. Jamie didn't know where she was or how far from home she had been taken, but she learned quickly how to stay alive in Patterson's world. She followed his rules. She didn't ask questions. She stayed silent when he paced the floor or muttered to himself. She avoided eye contact when he was in a bad mood. Patterson told her if she tried to escape, "I'll kill you just like I killed your parents." He reminded her what he'd done, that no one was coming, that she belonged to him now. And for a long time, she believed him. Still, something inside her stayed strong, focused, patient. She paid attention. Small moments, deep impact. There were rare instances when Patterson allowed her out from under the bed. Once, he gave her a puzzle to do. Another time, he let her sit on the living room couch and watch TV for a few minutes. He laughed at the idea that they looked like a normal couple. He brought her fast food once, and a Starbucks drink, as if he was rewarding her for not trying to run. It was a twisted game of control. He saw himself as a captor and a savior, a killer and a caregiver. But Jamie never saw him as anything but what he was, a monster. She never called him by name, and she never stopped looking for a way out. Neighbors who didn't know. For nearly 3 months, Patterson's life appeared normal, at least to the few who knew he existed. His father, who shared custody of the cabin, visited once in a while but never came inside when Jake asked him not to. He didn't question it. A few neighbors had seen Jake around but described him as shy, unremarkable, invisible. Just a guy in his early 20s who drove a beat-up Ford Taurus. No one suspected a child was being held captive just a few yards away. That was exactly how Patterson wanted it. A life in the shadows. Jamie wasn't shackled. She wasn't locked in a basement. Her chains weren't physical. They were psychological. Patterson told her he had installed security systems and motion sensors. He hadn't. That he could hear her breathe from outside. He couldn't. That no one would believe her if she escaped. They would. For 88 days, she lived in that shadow. But while he believed she was broken, she was quietly studying him. His routines, his habits, the layout of the house, where he kept his keys. She knew he woke up late, knew which jacket he wore when he went out, knew how long it took him to go grocery shopping. She learned everything she could about her jailer, because she knew that one day, he'd slip. The day he did. On January 10th, 2019, Patterson told Jamie he was leaving for a few hours. He didn't build the barricade under the bed as tightly as usual. He didn't double-check the door. He was in a rush. Jamie waited. She listened for the sound of his car pulling away, then for the silence that followed. And then she ran. She grabbed a pair of his shoes that were too big for her and threw on a jacket. No phone, no map, just the burning instinct to run. She pushed through the cabin door and stumbled out into the winter woods, freedom in the snow. She didn't know where she was going, but she moved with purpose. Down the road, she saw a woman walking her dog. Jean Nutter, a retired social worker, was taking a familiar route through her neighborhood. Jamie ran toward her. "I'm Jamie Kloss," she said. "I need help. He killed my parents." Nutter froze, stunned. Jamie's face was pale, hair matted, her voice calm but trembling. She didn't cry. She didn't break down. She just wanted to go home. Nutter brought her to a neighbor's house. They called 911, and within minutes, law enforcement knew the impossible had happened. Jamie Kloss had survived. The cabin crumbles. Jake Patterson was caught just 11 minutes later, driving down the road looking for her. When officers pulled him over, he said the words no one expected. I did it. He didn't fight. He didn't argue. He confessed everything. The murders, the kidnapping, the cabin, the duct tape, the shotgun, the lies. He admitted he had no remorse, that he had chosen Jamie because he could get away with it. He had burned the clothes he wore the night of the murder. He had removed the shotgun's serial number. He believed he had planned the perfect crime, but he didn't plan for her courage. He didn't plan for her mind. He didn't plan for her escape. Ending Chapter 4. Beyond Survival. Jamie had spent nearly 3 months under psychological torment, caged beneath a bed, mourning her murdered parents, living each day under threat of death. But she never gave in, never gave up. In that cold, dark cabin, she waited. She studied. She survived. And when her moment came, she ran straight into freedom. Her abduction was horrifying, but her return would become legendary. Chapter 5. Escape and Rescue. The moment she broke free, January 10th, 2019. It was a bitterly cold afternoon in Gordon, Wisconsin. The sun hovered low behind clouds, casting long gray shadows through the trees. Inside the rundown cabin in the woods, 13-year-old Jamie Kloss was alone. Jake Patterson had told her he'd be gone for several hours. He was going to Superior, Wisconsin, a quick trip, routine. Jamie knew his patterns, and this time she didn't hesitate. She pushed aside the makeshift barricade of bins, weights, and laundry baskets. She crawled out from under the bed she'd been forced to live beneath for nearly 3 months. She slipped on Patterson's oversized shoes, her own had been taken from her long ago, and pulled on a jacket that smelled like him. She stepped outside into the freezing air. She ran, Jean Nutter's walk. Jean Nutter, a retired social worker, had just leashed her golden retriever for an afternoon walk. She decided on a whim to take a different path, one that led her closer to the end of the long gravel road that ran past her home. As she approached the corner, she saw something that made her stop cold. A young girl, thin, disheveled, wearing shoes far too large, hair tangled, her face pale but determined. The girl walked quickly but with caution. Her eyes darted from tree to tree as if still expecting someone to drag her back. Jean's instincts kicked in. Before she could ask anything, the girl spoke. I'm Jamie, Jamie Kloss. Nutter froze, Jamie Kloss, the name the entire country had come to know, the girl from Barron who had vanished the same night her parents were murdered. You're safe now, Gina whispered. Come with me. Calling for help, Nutter rushed Jamie to the nearest home she trusted, that of Kristen and Peter Kosinskas, just down the road. Kristen was a local middle school science teacher. She opened the door to find her neighbor breathless, trembling, with a teenage girl by her side. This is Jamie Kloss, Jean said. Call 911, right now. Kristen grabbed the phone. Jamie stood in the entryway, barely speaking, but she answered every question the dispatcher asked. Her name, her kidnapper, his car, what he'd done, where she had escaped from. She said it all with clarity and calm. I knew she had just been through hell, Kristen later said, but she looked strong, focused, like she was done being afraid. The arrest. When Jake Patterson returned to his cabin just minutes later, he had no idea Jamie was gone or that she had just shattered his delusion of control. He barely got a mile down the road before sheriff's deputies spotted his red Ford Taurus and surrounded him. He didn't resist. When asked to step out of the vehicle, he raised his hands and said clearly, I know what this is about. He was arrested on the spot. And just like that, after 88 days of fear and silence, the man who destroyed Jamie's world was in custody. Back to Barron, Jamie was taken to a nearby hospital for examination. Though malnourished, dirty, and emotionally fragile, she was in surprisingly good health. She asked to see her family. Barron County Sheriff Chris Fitzgerald drove to the Kloss home personally to deliver the news. Jamie was alive. Alive. When her family heard, they wept. They screamed. They collapsed with relief. There had been so many long, hopeless nights, so many vigils, so many dead-end leads, and now she was coming home. Sheriff Fitzgerald later told the press, "Jamie is the hero in this story. She escaped. She saved herself." Nationwide shock and joy. The news broke across every major outlet within minutes. CNN, The New York Times, Fox News, BBC, People Magazine. Social media exploded with three words, "Jamie is alive." The country that had mourned with Barron now celebrated with them. Strangers left flowers and signs outside the sheriff's department. Police officers high-fived each other in hallways. FBI agents openly cried. Vigils turned into celebrations. The pink ribbons tied to fences across town were no longer symbols of grief, but survival. Details emerge. Over the next 48 hours, the full story began to unfold. Authorities held back little. Jamie's capture, the murders of her parents, the months in captivity, the escape. Jake Patterson, now charged with 2 counts of first-degree homicide, 1 count of kidnapping, and 1 of armed burglary, confessed immediately. His interviews with investigators were detailed and disturbing. He explained how he saw Jamie on the school bus and decided she was the one, how he studied her home, planned the attack, shaved his head to avoid DNA evidence, and killed her parents with a shotgun. He admitted to locking her under a bed, to isolating her, to playing psychological games. He showed no remorse. A girl transformed. Jamie's return was nothing short of a miracle, but it came at a price. She had lost everything, her parents, her home, her childhood. Yet what stunned even the most hardened law enforcement officials was her strength. "She wasn't broken," one detective said. "She had been through something unthinkable, and she still held her head high. She stayed with an aunt and uncle in Barron, surrounded by cousins and family. She received trauma counseling. The community raised money for her recovery. Donations poured in from around the country. Her school classmates welcomed her back with open arms. Her room was left just as she had it, books, posters, trophies, because she came home." Patterson's charges and confession. Patterson's confession removed the need for a drawn-out trial. He pled guilty in March 2019, just 2 months after his arrest. He was sentenced to 2 consecutive life terms without the possibility of parole, plus an additional 40 years. He was later transferred to a maximum security prison out of state after expressing concern about his own safety behind bars. During sentencing, Jamie didn't speak, but her words were read aloud by a family member. She said, "He thought he could own me, but he was wrong. I was brave. I outsmarted him, and I got myself out. I will always have my freedom, and he will never have any of me again." The world learns her name again. In the months that followed, Jamie became a symbol, not of victimhood, but of resilience. She inspired news specials, documentaries, and in-depth features, not focused on the horror, but on the bravery. She met Elizabeth Smart, who embraced her and told her, "You're not alone, and you never were." In honor of Jamie's strength, Wisconsin passed new laws to expand protections and emergency resources for missing and abducted children. National Missing Children's Day took on a new level of significance, and a new date was quietly circled on calendars, January 10th, the day she escaped. Ending Chapter 5, Light Breaking Through. Jamie Kloss didn't wait to be rescued. She studied. She endured. She survived. Then, in the frozen grip of winter, she ran through the woods and claimed her life back. She escaped not just a cabin, but a predator's grip. She reclaimed her name, her voice, her future. What she did that day would become one of the most remarkable survival stories in modern history, and it was far from over. Chapter 6, Confession, Trial, Sentence. No denials, no excuses. Just days after his arrest, Jake Patterson sat in an interrogation room with the FBI and local detectives. He didn't ask for a lawyer. He didn't hesitate. He confessed. From the moment he saw Jamie Kloss step off her school bus, he said, "I knew she was the one." There was no deeper reason, no grudge, no twisted motive from his past, just a moment of obsession, one that metastasized into murder and abduction. He admitted to planning the entire thing, staking out the Kloss family home, choosing a night when he believed they'd be most vulnerable and preparing for every possible scenario. In his mind, it was a perfect plan, clean, contained, untraceable. What he didn't plan for was Jamie. Detailed and disturbing. Over hours of interviews, Patterson explained every detail of the crime. He had purchased a black balaclava to hide his face, shaved his head and facial hair to avoid leaving DNA, and removed the dome light in his car so it wouldn't turn on when the door opened. He drove to the Kloss home multiple times before finally carrying out the plan. He admitted that when James Kloss opened the front door, he fired a shotgun round point blank. He pushed past the dying man and found Denise and Jamie locked in the bathroom. He forced Denise to tape Jamie's mouth, and then he shot her too. He took Jamie to his car, locked her in the trunk, and drove 70 miles north, past squad cars, past volunteers already beginning to mobilize, into the woods of Gordon. He described the 88 days she was under his control in unsettling detail, how he kept her under his bed, surrounded by weights and boxes, how he threatened her, how he controlled every movement she made, but he never believed she would actually escape. When detectives asked if he felt guilty, Patterson replied quietly, "No, I did it. I knew what I was doing." Charges filed. On January 14, 2019, Jake Thomas Patterson was formally charged in Barron County Circuit Court, 2 counts of first-degree intentional homicide, 1 count of kidnapping, 1 count of armed burglary. Prosecutors quickly emphasized the strength of the case. Not only did Patterson confess in full detail, but physical evidence from the cabin, duct tape with Jamie's DNA, the shotgun used in the murders, and surveillance footage of his car cemented the timeline. He had also told police that he believed if he buried Jamie's body, no one would ever find it. It was cold, premeditated, and merciless, and it was enough to lock him away for life. A legal strategy, abandoned. Initially, Patterson's attorneys hinted that they might explore an insanity defense. There were whispers of mental health evaluations, behavioral issues from his youth, possible isolation and depression. But Patterson waived his right to a preliminary hearing, and on March 27, 2019, just 2.5 months after his arrest, he pled guilty to all charges. There would be no trial, no cross-examination, no dragging Jamie through the trauma again. He told the judge, "I didn't want her family to suffer more than they already have." It was one of the few moments where his voice broke. Still, the courtroom was filled with a tension that words couldn't diffuse. The sentencing hearing. On May 24, 2019, the courtroom in Barron was packed. Jamie's family sat in the front row, her aunt, uncle, cousins, and supporters holding tightly to one another. Reporters filled every available seat. Officers from both Barron and Douglas counties stood in uniform, silent sentinels for the girl who had stunned them all. Jake Patterson wore an orange jumpsuit. Shackled at the ankles and wrists, he kept his head bowed throughout the hearing. He did not speak. Instead, the people whose lives he shattered had the floor. Jamie's voice, unbroken. Jamie did not attend the sentencing in person, but her words echoed through the courtroom as her family read her statement aloud. "He thought he could own me, but he was wrong. I was brave. I outsmarted him. I watched his routine. I took back my freedom. He can never take away who I am." She closed with a line that silenced the room. "He will never have any power over me again." Her statement was powerful, not just in its message, but in its delivery. Calm, composed, defiant. It wasn't just justice. It was liberation. The sentence judge, James Babler, did not hold back. He addressed Patterson directly. "You are the embodiment of evil. The public can only be safe if you are incarcerated for the rest of your life, period." He then handed down the sentence. 2 consecutive life sentences without the possibility of parole for the murders of James and Denise Kloss. 40 additional years for the kidnapping of Jamie Kloss. Patterson showed little emotion. His head hung low. He nodded slightly, as if acknowledging a truth he already knew. He would never be free again. Transfer and isolation. Due to concerns for his safety, Patterson was quickly moved from the Barron County Jail to a high-security facility out of state. The Wisconsin Department of Corrections later confirmed that he had been relocated to New Mexico. He was placed under protective custody, kept away from the general population due to the nature of his crimes. Even among inmates, those who harm children are often treated with hostility. He spends his days in isolation, no contact with Jamie, no voice in her life, just a cold cell and the memory of a girl who defied him. Justice served, but scars remain. Jamie's physical survival was nothing short of extraordinary, but emotional healing is a slower journey. After returning to Barron, she moved in with her aunt and uncle, Jennifer and Peter Smith. They enrolled her back into school. They gave her privacy, support, and a sense of normalcy. She began seeing a trauma therapist. She reconnected with friends. She found comfort in her dog, Molly. There were nightmares, flashbacks, anxiety when walking into crowded rooms, triggers she didn't expect, loud noises, heavy footsteps, certain smells. But she kept moving forward. "She's incredibly resilient," her family said. "She has more strength than we ever imagined." The community's role. Barron didn't forget Jamie. Local businesses donated thousands toward her recovery. Churches hosted events in her honor. Her classmates planted a tree outside the school, dedicating it to Jamie's courage. The sheriff's office, FBI, and search and rescue teams were all honored for their dedication, but every one of them gave credit to the same person. Jamie rescued herself. She was more than a survivor. She was a symbol of what it means to fight, even when the odds seem impossible. Ending Chapter 6, a life sentence, a life reclaimed. Jake Patterson will never walk free again, and Jamie Kloss, despite the unimaginable trauma she endured, found her way home, not just to her family, but to herself. The justice system worked. The community stood strong. But the greatest justice of all came from the girl who refused to be forgotten, who waited, planned, and broke free, who faced her captor in court through her own words, and whose voice will echo long after the prison doors slam shut behind him. Chapter 7, Jamie's Recovery and Legacy. Coming home, but changed. When Jamie Kloss returned to Barron, Wisconsin in January 2019, she didn't come home to the life she left. Her house, where she had laughed with her parents, celebrated birthdays, watched movies, eaten family dinners, was now a sealed crime scene. It sat dark and still for months until it was eventually demolished. She came home an orphan. She came home a survivor. She was just 13, but her eyes had aged. Her smile, when it returned, was quieter. Her voice carried the weight of unspeakable loss and unstoppable strength. Though she was finally safe, the road ahead would be its own kind of battle. A family rebuilt. Jamie moved in with her aunt. Kloss's name. Her school photo, soft brown hair, quiet eyes, a small smile, flashed across every screen. The Amber Alert system lit up phones across the Midwest. Jamie Kloss, 13, 5 FL, 100 LOBs. Possibly abducted from Barron, last seen at home, parents deceased. Across the region, people stopped what they were doing. Clerks stared at the television behind the counter. Farmers checked their barns twice. Neighbors watched each other with suspicion. In less than 12 hours, Jamie became the face of every parent's worst nightmare. Who would want to hurt them? The Kloss family had no enemies, at least none anyone could name. James worked at Jenny O. Turkey's store for nearly 27 years, rising early each morning to report to the plant. He was quiet, dependable, and lived for weekends with his family. Denise worked in the same company's office. She was known for her kindness, a churchgoer who adored her daughter. Jamie was their only child, a seventh grader at Riverview Middle School. She was shy, sweet, and deeply bonded with her parents. She had never been in trouble, never had issues at school. There was no boyfriend, no known predators in her circle. Detectives quickly ruled out family involvement. There were no signs of custody battles, legal troubles, or abuse. No drugs, no debt. Nothing that screamed motive. Just a vanished child and two murdered parents. A ghost crime. The first 48 Barron County Sheriff's Department brought in the FBI within hours. Evidence technicians combed through the house. Blood patterns were studied. Phone records subpoenaed. Surveillance cameras from nearby intersections and businesses were pulled. Agents and officers fanned out across the town. They checked sex offender registries, interviewed neighbors, canvassed gas stations and motels. They tracked every car that passed near the Kloss home that night. Over the next 2 days, more than 400 tips flooded in. Nothing stuck. Deputies returned to Jamie's school. Her friends were questioned again. Counselors were brought in. Did she ever say someone was watching her? Did she seem scared lately? The answer was always the same. No, Jamie was just a regular kid. An empty room, a full heart. The Kloss home was sealed as a crime scene, but Jamie's room remained untouched by violence. Her and Uncle Jennifer and Peter Smith, along with their children, her cousins. It wasn't a perfect substitute for the family she had lost, but it gave her what she needed most. Love, protection, and the freedom to heal at her own pace. Her bedroom was filled with soft lights and calming colors. Her dog Molly, who had survived the night of the murders, slept beside her again. Familiar smells, familiar hugs, quiet conversations, all stitched back a sense of normalcy. But nothing about her healing was easy. She had to relearn how to feel safe in rooms with closed doors. She flinched at loud noises. She startled at footsteps behind her. She struggled with flashbacks and recurring nightmares. Still, she chose to live. She returned to school. She smiled again. She danced again. She spoke again. Her own words. Later that year, Jamie gave a statement to be read aloud by her guardian. It was her first public reflection since her escape. I want to thank everyone who helped me and my family. I'm getting stronger every day. I feel loved and supported, and that makes me feel brave. That word, brave, became a theme throughout the town of Barron. It was printed on t-shirts, painted on murals, posted in classroom windows. Brave like Jamie. She hadn't just endured, she had defied. A community transformed. Jamie's abduction and escape reshaped Barron forever. Before, it was a quiet town known for turkey processing and Friday night football. Now, it had become a symbol. For fear, yes, but also for resilience. The sheriff's department restructured how it responded to missing person cases. New community watch programs were established. Schools implemented updated safety drills. Churches started support groups for children dealing with anxiety and trauma. More than anything, Jamie's story reminded people of what matters most, protecting the vulnerable and believing that light can be found, even in the darkest places. Local businesses raised more than $50,000 for a scholarship in her name. The town held a Jamie Day celebration in the park to mark the anniversary of her escape. And at the center of it all was a young girl who had once been silent. Now, her voice echoed everywhere. Ripples beyond. Barron Jamie's story reached far beyond the borders of her town. Child protection. Organizations around the country used her case to push for improved systems for rapid response and search coordination. Advocacy groups spoke to Congress about expanding trauma services for survivors of abduction and violent crime. Elizabeth Smart, herself a survivor of kidnapping, met Jamie privately. Their embrace, one generation of strength meeting another, was shared in photographs across the country. She doesn't just survive, Smart said. She leads. The birth of a movement. In 2020, the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children declared January 10th, Jamie's Escape Day, as Abduction Survivors Recognition Day. It became an annual reminder not only of Jamie, but of every child who has endured, escaped, or been lost to acts of violence. Survivors began sharing their stories, some for the first time. Families of missing children wrote letters to Jamie, thanking her for giving them hope. Her survival was not just a conclusion, it was a beginning. Jamie today. Jamie Kloss turned 18 in 2023. She has remained largely private, choosing to stay out of the spotlight. She graduated high school quietly and is reportedly interested in working in the field of criminal justice or victim advocacy. Her inner circle is small but strong. Those close to her say she still faces challenges. Crowds can be overwhelming. Trust takes time, but she's found purpose in healing and power in helping others. She continues to work with therapists. She journals. She stays close to nature. She leans on family. She is alive. She is whole. And she is free. The demolition of the house, the rebuilding of a life. In late 2019, the Kloss family home, once the scene of unthinkable horror, was demolished. It was a decision made by the family not to erase what had happened, but to allow healing to move forward Nothing would ever bring James and Denise Kloss back, but something could grow in their place. The lot was left empty. Grass and flowers began to take over. Nature reclaimed what tragedy had hollowed out. Jamie did not return to visit, but she didn't have to. Her home was no longer tied to a building. It was in the people who loved her, the strength she had found, the freedom she had seized. Lessons that remain. Jamie's story isn't about a perfect rescue. It's about resistance, grit, quiet observation, and a singular decision made in fear to fight for life. Her captor thought he could erase her world, but she rebuilt it. He thought he could erase her name, but she made it known across the world. He thought she would forget who she was, but she never did. Blankets were still messy, her school books stacked on the desk, her phone, her earrings, her favorite hoodie, all there. Investigators stood quietly in that room, feeling the weight of what was missing. Her absence was deafening. At the school, her locker was covered in sticky notes from classmates. "Come home soon, Jamie. We miss you. You're strong." A pink ribbon tied around the flagpole began to fade in the sun. A town mobilized. Within 48 hours, hundreds of volunteers were searching the forests, fields, and ditches surrounding Barron. Firefighters, teachers, truck drivers, high schoolers, retired veterans. They walked in rows across swamps, under bridges, along every gravel road. They combed land with search dogs, drones, and mounted patrols. Helicopters flew low over wooded parcels. "No piece of land goes untouched," said one volunteer. "We won't stop until we find her." Meanwhile, national media arrived. Trucks parked outside the sheriff's department. Anchors went live from the Kloss driveway. Journalists, armed with speculation, theories, and talking heads, began to circle. The FBI raised the reward to $50,000, then $100,000. But days turned to weeks, and nothing. False alarms and dead ends. At least three different sightings of a girl matching Jamie's description were reported in the first 2 weeks, from gas stations to rest stops. In each case, it wasn't her. A woman claimed she saw a girl being pulled into a red car. A trucker thought he saw her hitchhiking. Another caller claimed a girl fitting her photo had been seen at a Walmart in Miami. Every tip was chased, every video reviewed, all false. A psychic sent in a hand-drawn map. Someone from out of state claimed Jamie had contacted her through dreams. Another insisted she was in Canada. The investigation grew bloated. Nearly 2,000 tips logged in 3 weeks. But no suspect, no ransom, no credible leads. The question was no longer, where is Jamie, but how could someone disappear like this? The chilling possibility. By week 4, the mood shifted. Sheriff Fitzgerald gave another press conference. "We cannot rule out the possibility that she is no longer alive," he said, his voice steady but tired. The room fell silent. No one wanted to hear it, but everyone felt it. The candlelight vigils grew quieter. The yellow ribbons faded in the weather. The posters began to peel. At school, Jamie's desk remained empty. Her classmates whispered less often. Teachers tried to move on, but they couldn't. Everyone in Barron had a theory. Everyone was afraid. Unseen and unknown. What haunted the investigators most was how clean the crime was. There was no DNA from an outsider, no fingerprint, no footprint, no hair. Whoever had taken Jamie had done it without leaving a trace. The killer brought a weapon, killed efficiently, and vanished with a child in under 5 minutes. It was methodical. It was practiced. But most terrifying of all, it was someone no one saw coming. Ending Chapter 1, A Vanishing Point. By mid-November, a full month had passed. Jamie Kloss was still missing. There were no major breaks, no suspect names, no murder weapon, just silence. Inside the war room at the sheriff's department, maps lined the walls, marked with pins and notes. Screens showed highway camera footage on loop. Tips were logged, cross-referenced, and exhausted. Yet the sense lingered. Jamie was still out there, somewhere, and whoever had her had killed for her. Chapter 2. The nation searches. A town, grieving a nation. Watching. The morning after the Kloss murders, Barron was transformed. What had once been a quiet dairy town of just over 3,000 people became the epicenter of a national tragedy. Crime scene tape clung to the trees like scar tissue. Police cruisers sat parked along Highway 8. News vans lined the shoulders. And above it all, on every building, bulletin board, and phone screen, was the face of Jamie Kloss, America's missing child. As the story unfolded, the FBI established a command post right outside the local sheriff's department. Inside, walls were covered in maps, whiteboards, and timelines. More than 100 federal agents were embedded in Barron. The Bureau sent in child abduction experts, veteran profilers, behavioral analysts. The search for Jamie became a race against time, and whoever had taken her was still completely invisible. Volunteers by the thousands. Sheriff Fitzgerald made a plea to the public. "We need your help." And they answered. In the first week alone, more than 2,000 volunteers came forward, some local, many from hours away. Farmers, high school, students, mechanics, off-duty nurses. People showed up with boots, flashlights, gloves, and tears in their eyes. Every inch of Barron County was combed. Teams walked in grid patterns across dense woods, marshes, fields, and highway shoulders. Canines were brought in from Illinois and Minnesota. Horseback search parties covered rural trails. Helicopters buzzed overhead, using infrared technology to look for signs of movement. Drones hovered above farms and abandoned structures. It was one of the largest missing child searches in Wisconsin history, and still nothing. Hundreds of leads, all dead ends. By the end of week one, the sheriff's department had received more than 800 leads. Every single one was tracked, logged, and chased. Tips ranged from hopeful to heartbreaking. A woman said she saw a girl matching Jamie's description at a truck stop restroom in Iowa. A man reported hearing muffled cries from an RV parked outside a Walmart. Another claimed he spotted a young girl at a church revival in Missouri. Each tip took time and manpower. Each one ended the same way. Not Jamie. The leads were erratic, the trail cold. What gnawed at the investigators most wasn't the lack of a suspect, but the absence of even a type. There was no ransom, no communication, no online trace. It was as if the killer had stepped in from nowhere, committed a double homicide, and vanished into thin air with a child. But someone knew something. They had to. National coverage and a community strained. By week two, Jamie's story had exploded across national media. Major networks dedicated entire segments to the mystery. Dateline and 2020 aired special reports. Cable news replayed the 911 timeline, speculated about motives, and replayed interviews with Sheriff Fitzgerald. Social media lit up with hashtags, "Find Jamie, Bring Jamie Home, Bershing Chow, Barron Strong." The Kloss family members, now devastated and grieving, made public pleas through the sheriff's department. Jamie's aunts, uncles, and cousins stood before cameras, holding framed photos in trembling hands. "Jamie," her Aunt Jennifer cried during a press conference, "if you can hear us, we are looking for you. We are not giving up." But the pressure on law enforcement was mounting. Barron was being consumed by reporters, by cameras, by questions they couldn't answer. And under the surface, fear took root. Parents began walking their kids to school again. Neighbors started locking their doors. Small-town trust turned into quiet paranoia. The worst part? No one knew what to be afraid of. Celebrity support and growing hope. As Jamie's name reached across the country, it struck a particular chord with someone who had lived it, Elizabeth Smart. Smart, who had been abducted from her Utah home at 14 and held captive for 9 months, began speaking out in support of the Kloss family. "This is every parent's worst nightmare," she said in an interview. "But if I could be rescued, Jamie can be too." Her words carried weight and hope. People across the country wrote letters, sent donations, and organized prayer circles. Local businesses printed custom t-shirts with Jamie's face. Churches added her name to every bulletin. School counselors held assemblies about safety and resilience. Billboards in neighboring states began displaying her photo. The search had become more than a missing persons case. It was now a national mission. False alarms and heartbreak. But for all the hope, each false alarm delivered another emotional gut punch. A couple driving through Minnesota reported a frightened girl hiding in their motel parking lot. Officers arrived. It was not Jamie. A bartender in Duluth thought a customer matched her abductor's sketch. Police rushed in. It was a case of mistaken identity. A gas station clerk said a man and a girl matching Jamie's build had paid with cash and left in a maroon sedan. That vehicle was later traced to a traveling family on vacation. Each time, families held their breath. Each time, it ended the same, not her. And each time, Sheriff Fitzgerald had to come forward and say what he dreaded. We continue to investigate all leads, but we have nothing to confirm Jamie's whereabouts. Profiling the unknown. With few physical clues, the FBI turned to behavioral profiling. Experts met for hours, sketching the psychological makeup of the perpetrator. Here's what they guessed. A white male, mid-20s to 30s. Likely lives alone, isolated, probably knows the area. Rural access roads, backwoods, old cabins. Maybe socially awkward or lack a criminal record. Knew Jamie, but not her parents. They believed the crime was planned, not spontaneous. The killer had come with a weapon, disabled the family, and left undetected. That meant discipline, calculation. Someone who had watched her, stalked her, someone who didn't care about money, but wanted her. Still, without DNA, a weapon, or a vehicle description, it was just theory. And theory didn't bring Jamie home. Living with the unknown, weeks turned to a month, then two. Jamie's birthday passed on October 28th. She turned 14 in silence. Classmates left a gift basket outside her locker. Teachers signed a card. Her best friend cried quietly in the hallway. The Kloss family began preparing for Christmas without her. Jamie's presents remained unopened under her aunt's tree. FBI agents still worked 16-hour shifts. Deputies still ran every plate, checked every lead, drove hundreds of miles. But even the strongest wills were beginning to strain. What if she was gone? What if they were too late? And then everything changed. A flicker on the horizon. It happened on a cold January day, nearly 3 months after Jamie vanished, in the woods of Gordon, Wisconsin, 70 miles north of Barron. A woman named Jean Nutter was walking her dog when she saw something moving on the edge of the road. A girl, thin, dirty, eyes wide, sunken, exhausted. She wasn't crying, just standing there. "Can you help me?" she asked softly. Jean froze. The girl said her name. "I'm Jamie." Time stopped. Ending chapter 2. A break in the silence. Within hours, the call went out to law enforcement. "We found Jamie Kloss, alive." The news broke across every outlet in America. From the White House to the smallest gas station in Wisconsin, the country erupted in stunned relief. 3 months of grief, searching, and silence, broken by one girl's escape. But what happened during those 88 days? Where had she been? And who was the man behind it all? The answers were coming, and they were worse than anyone feared. Chapter 3. Behind the Abduction. The name no one knew. Just hours after 13-year-old Jamie Kloss escaped and flagged down a stranger in the freezing woods of Gordon, Wisconsin, the man responsible was arrested without resistance. His name, Jake Thomas Patterson. 21 years old, pale, clean-shaven, thin. He lived in a remote, one-story cabin just minutes from where Jamie had made her escape. He had no criminal record, no social media presence, no known connection to the Kloss family. He wasn't on anyone's radar, because no one even knew he existed, until now. A stranger in the shadows. Investigators were stunned. Patterson wasn't someone from the family's circle. He wasn't a neighbor. He had no romantic history with anyone related to Jamie. Not a coworker, not a teacher, not even an acquaintance. He was a complete stranger. Yet, when Patterson sat down with detectives, he revealed something chilling. He had been planning this for months, and his obsession had started with a single moment. He saw Jamie getting on her school bus. That was it. He didn't know her name. He didn't know anything about her family, but he saw her and decided he had to have her. From that moment on, Jamie Kloss became his target. The planning Jake Patterson had once worked for just 2 days at a turkey plant, ironically, the same one where Jamie's parents were employed, but no one there remembered him. After seeing Jamie board the school bus, Patterson began fantasizing. He studied her routine. He watched her house. He drove by it repeatedly, planning the attack. He even attempted to kidnap her twice before October 15th, but each time, he lost his nerve. The third time, he came prepared. with military-like precision. He shaved his head and face to avoid leaving DNA. He wore all black, including gloves and a balaclava. He removed the dome light in his car so it wouldn't turn on when he opened the door. He brought a shotgun. His plan: kill anyone who got in his way and leave no trace behind. The night of the murders. On October 15, 2018, Patterson parked a short distance from the Kloss home. He disabled the interior lights of his vehicle. He approached the house quietly, flashlight in hand. Jamie and her parents were watching TV when the dog started barking. James Kloss went to the front door. That's when Patterson fired his first shot, blasting the lock open and hitting James point blank. He entered quickly, moving through the house. Denise Kloss had already taken Jamie and locked themselves in the bathroom, phone in hand. She was trying to dial 911 when Patterson kicked down the door. He forced Denise to duct tape Jamie's mouth and hands. Then he shot her in front of her daughter. The escape with Jamie Patterson pulled Jamie from the blood-soaked bathroom, wrapped in tape and trembling. He dragged her outside, stuffed her into the trunk of his car, and drove off. For the next several hours, while law enforcement swarmed the Kloss residence, Jamie lay silently in the trunk, just feet away from patrol cars that unknowingly passed her abductor on the road. He brought her back to his remote cabin in Gordon, an isolated shack deep in the woods, invisible from the road. He told her, "I killed your parents. If you try to escape, I'll kill you too." And so began Jamie's captivity. Inside the cabin, the house was small and filthy. Jamie was forced to sleep under a twin bed. Patterson had rigged a barricade of boxes and weights around the bed so she couldn't escape or be easily seen. He kept her under that bed for up to 12 hours at a time. No bathroom breaks, no food, unless he allowed it. If guests came over, she was warned to remain silent or die. When Patterson left the house, he turned up the music so neighbors couldn't hear anything if she tried to call for help. Jamie later told police that she heard him pacing, talking to himself, and sometimes laughing. He would sometimes reward her with small things, an occasional meal, or letting her sit on the couch for a few minutes. Once, he brought her a Starbucks coffee, but she was never safe. He hit her with a curtain rod once for disobeying. He threatened to hurt her if she tried to escape. She was not allowed to leave the property, not allowed to bathe, not allowed to make noise. Jamie was held prisoner for 88 days. Jake Patterson, the profile of a captor. So who was Jake Patterson? Raised in a broken home, Patterson was a former honor roll student, quiet and intelligent, but deeply withdrawn. He dropped out of the Marines after just 5 weeks, couldn't hold a steady job. He was a recluse who rarely left his home. Most neighbors didn't even know his name. He had no history of violence, no known mental illness, no prior arrests, no girlfriend, no friends. He was invisible until he made a victim visible. When asked why he chose Jamie, he gave a haunting answer. She was the one. There was no sexual assault, no ransom demand,